welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan. There are more than 600 small loan companies in New Mexico. You see them on street corners all over Albuquerque with big signs saying, "Get cash now." They're called storefront lenders, and they'll give you money with your car title, your tax return, or a couple other pieces of paper as collateral. In the studio with us this morning is Ona Porter. She is the president and CEO of Prosperity Works, an organization that helps New Mexicans lift themselves out of poverty by helping them save money and build assets. Ona, thank you for being with us here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
On the phone in a few minutes, we will have Andrew Morrison, an executive of Sun Loan Company, which is headquartered in San Antonio, Texas. Sun Loan has a bunch of stores here in New Mexico, and he will join us by phone. After that, we'll hear from former state senator Steve Fishman, who has an MBA from UCLA and some other acronyms behind his name. He spent 20 years working in finance and management at Levi Strauss. He is spending his time now volunteering to work on regulating short-term lending. Right now, let's talk to you, Ona. The industry supporters say that it's really important for communities that don't have a lot of money to have access to capital. And this is something I expect you would agree with. Why isn't short-term lending the right way to help these people get access to money?
Well, short-term lending is, of course, something that's important to all of us. The difference between low-income communities and communities of color and those of us who have privilege in our communities is that our access to money is really very cost effective. So, for instance, on a credit card, I can get, you know, $500 if I need it for maybe 15%, 18% at the max. On the other hand, if somebody has no credit history or is very limited income, they go to a storefront lender, and that same amount of money would cost them someplace between 80 and 400%.
So why don't they just borrow the money on a credit card?
They don't have credit cards. Mm-hmm. What has happened is that low-income and communities and communities of color have been marginalized from the ability to build credit. And when you have no credit, you can get no credit.
Right. So the average person who takes out a short-term loan borrows about $650 and pays back about 340% interest. Now, I'm super bad at math. So talk to me about how this works. I don't even understand that. There's no way I could do the algebra involved there.
Well, and nor can the people who are coming in and borrowing that money. Most of those folks feel like their emergency can be taken care of within a very short period of time, and it appears that this is a good deal for them on the face. In fact, what we know is that most loans, about 80% of the loans that are taken are rolled over or refinanced. And in that refinancing, something that starts out at $300 frequently ends up in less than 4 or 5 months at over $1,000.
And so how, you know, so what do they do when they owe that $1,000? I mean, if you needed to borrow $600 to begin with, how do you pay back $1,000?
Well, that is the difficulty. It becomes impossible to pay it back. And so they get into a cycle of debt and rolling over and rolling over. And in fact, the average number of rollovers for these loans is about 8. And so as a consequence, people go deeper and deeper into debt, and unless they are able to use family or some other means to bail themselves out, they frequently lose a car. We had over 2,000 cars repossessed last year in New Mexico from title loans, for instance, or they just continue in this cycle. So an example of that, we actually have a financial educator that is working with us now who has returned recently from California where he had been working to find his parents in Española, both in their 80s with 3 storefront loans. And these folks were actually going hungry so that they could pay these loans. Their son suggested bankruptcy, and his parents, not unlike most Americans, said, "But I took out these loans. I'm responsible for them. So I'm going to pay them no matter what the cost is to me."
So, you know, I hear you saying they roll over 10 times. Does that mean people go and take out another loan? You can't take another loan from the same place to pay the original loan, can you?
Well, you can.
Oh.
And they can be flipped many times. But they're also, if you look at the geographic placement of these stores, you will see that within very often a couple hundred yards that there are two or three or four of these. Many times those are actually related to one another. So the owners are own several of them. They just have different names. And they sometimes have different products. But the important point is that I can go from this one to this one to this one, and then I just multiply my problems while I'm trying to solve them.
But, you know, as the financial counselor that you work with, his parents pointed out, I mean, why can't we just hold people responsible for taking out these loans? Look, you've got to know this is, not as good of a deal as something else. Why can't they just keep this under control?
Well, in fact, what a lot of this is really emergency borrowing. So we have another example of a woman in Albuquerque who recently took out a loan to pay for her medicine. She has diabetes and several other health conditions. She had heard about title loans, and there was a title loan company that was right in her neighborhood. So she went in and borrowed $300. She was unable to pay that and actually had some additional expenses and ended up with a $1,000 loan. Over the course of about 18 months, she paid back almost $10,000. And when she couldn't pay the next payment, the company was threatening her with taking her car. She got the assistance, actually, of a local priest to help her negotiate and get out of this this debt.
So, you know, we're looking at several different ways that this industry might be more tightly regulated. It sounds like one of the ways you might think it could be more regulated is in making this stuff easier to understand. Is that one of the things you're trying to do?
Yes, not only understand, but also to really regulate. So one of the difficulties is that, many of the structures of the loans are so difficult to understand that people don't know what they're getting into. The other thing is, if we have any interest in consumer protection and looking at these, very often they're not – anything under 150% is not even reported, for instance. So we have no idea what's going on. So our proposal is actually a 36% cap rate, and it's just clean. That's it. The business model is 36%, period. There are no additional fees, no additional interest, no additional anything. It's 36%. And we say, who can't do business in this nation with a 36% interest rate?
Well, we have someone who can answer that question for us. On the line now, we have Andrew Morrison, an executive at SunLoan, who is in the business of giving out some of these very loans that we are talking about right now. Andrew, thank you for joining us.
It's good to be with you.
So, you might have heard a little bit of what we were just talking about. There was a recent poll that showed that 85% of New Mexicans support caps on storefront loans. You've got your work cut out for you to try to defend your industry here today, Andrew. Why do you think that providing access to short-term loans is important to communities in New Mexico?
Well, first of all, let me address this issue of the polls, because that kind of thing gets thrown around quite a lot. And I think if you were to ask people if they would be in favor of cheap steak in a restaurant, they'd be in favor of that too. So if I asked everybody, would you be in favor of a cap of $1 on every steaks sold in steak restaurants? People would say, yeah, please, I'm in favor of that too. But what that ignores is the fact that it costs more than a dollar for restaurants to put the steak on the table. And so, what a $1 cap on steak would mean is not cheap steak, but no steak. And in the same way, a 36% rate cap on a small dollar credit doesn't mean no additional fees, no this, no that, and cheap credit. It means no credit. or very, very little credit. There are a few organizations that have a special product that link to charities of one sort or another who might be able to provide it. But it's certainly not a comprehensive solution for the people of New Mexico. So that really needs to be understood, and it is understood by most legislators, I think, which is why the 36% bills are going nowhere. And I think where we are right now legislatively is that people understand that there's a problem, and at the same time, people understand that 36% is not a workable solution. It means that it creates a bigger problem than exists today.
What is the bigger problem that capping interest rates at 36? I mean, I think I hear you saying that if we limited storefront lenders to an interest rate of 36%, they just could not do that and they would all go out of business.
There would be no lending at all that is from... Remember, storefront lending is what you want to see, because the alternative to a building which is regulated and licensed by the state and has to obey certain rules is that the loans don't cease to exist. The loans come from places that that you can't regulate and license and see publicly. So the alternative to storefront lending is certainly worse than storefront lending, which is loans being made over the internet or from back alley characters that are really unsavory.
But I mean, so, you know, we make it pretty easy. If we didn't have so many fast food restaurants, I sure wouldn't eat so many cheeseburgers because they're kind of hard to make.
Well, I can't get into your dietary habits, but I can tell you that, you know, when it comes to demand for credit, and let me speak about the traditional installment loan industry, which is the industry that I'm involved with. Our loans are not things that people take out over a whim. Yes, I know people use credit cards that way. Arguably, they use payday loans that way because, you know, it's not exactly an intrusive process to apply for one of these, and people buy things over the internet using credit cards all the time. With one click, they're borrowing more money. It's not like that to get a traditional installment loan. You have to go in and answer a number of questions and fill out a budget form and prove that you have the ability to repay the loan. And that's the way proper storefront lending should go.
Andrew, let me interrupt you just for a second, because I want to make sure our listeners know that we want to hear from them. We are taking calls today. We'll take your comments in a variety of ways. Have you ever taken out a student loan? A storefront loan, I mean. What was your experience? State lawmakers in Santa Fe are considering changes to this, and we want to hear from you. You can call now at 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866. You can also email callinshow@kunm.org. Post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. We have one comment here by email from Patty. She said that she noticed after the last 2 years that three storefront loan shops have opened along a stretch of San Mateo here in Albuquerque. And she wants to know, does the storefront lending industry target particular neighborhoods? Andrew, can you tell us how you decide where to open a store?
We would obviously go where we think there is demand. And it's always interesting to hear this word target, because every industry targets in the sense that it tries to work out what demographic would have most need for its products, and you try to locate your services accordingly. Citibank just came out with an announcement when they said they were selling One Main Financial, which is a larger storefront lender. They said they wanted to do that because they want to only serve rich people. They're trying to reposition their brand so that they are associated only with serving wealthy people. And I think it's a good thing. We don't need more Citibanks. We don't need more organizations to go and target the wealthy. We have a much greater need in lower-income Americans, and we need to be able to have more organizations that are responsible lenders that are out there providing good, responsible services to lower-income Americans. And there was a New York Times article recently that came out and said that lower-income Americans have less than 2 weeks' savings. So I know it would be great if when people have an emergency, they would be able to use their savings. But the reality is they don't have the savings. And to say, oh, gosh, you shouldn't have storefront lenders, people should use their savings, is like saying, let them eat cake, as Marie Antoinette said.
Andrew,
people don't have cake. They need bread, and they need storefront lending.
Ona's over here waving to get my attention. Jump in, Ona.
Well, one of the things that I want to say is, first of all, that Andrew is saying it can't be done at 36% or less. In fact, there have been 20 states that have clamped down on high-cost loans, and they have gone from 17 to 36%. And the U.S. military lenders are forbidden from providing anything above 36% to them also. Now, Andrew will say that except for his product, the CFPB is now going back and revising the law that affects military folks for the purposes of saying no loan over 36%. There was a little.
CFPB doesn't have any say in that. That's the Department of Defense.
Well, that's right. And CFPB is looking at all the business practices with.
And very clearly, the CFPB is not allowed to get into the issue of rates at all under Dodd-Frank.
They are not. However,
they're encouraged to look at structure, which is a much better indicator of whether a product is a good and safe product or not a safe product. But rate doesn't come into it. And that when you talk about other states having 36% caps, nobody else has a hard cap like this. A hard cap is one that includes all other products and charges and fees and so on. And if they were to do that, they would have much bigger problems than they do.
Andrew, we need to take a quick break. Listeners, we've been talking about tax return anticipation loans, car title loans, and other short-term loans here on the KUNM Call-In Show. We want to hear from you, so call us with your questions and comments. The number is 277-5866 or toll-free 877-899-5866. Give us an email at callinshow@kunm.org. Post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, and friend us while you're there. Tweet us at KUNM News. We'll be right back.
Edible Arrangements at 4770 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast in Albuquerque offers fresh fruit bouquets and chocolate-dipped fruit for any occasion. EdibleArrangements.com or 505-888-0100. Edible Arrangements is a valued supporter of KUNM. Do you appreciate folk art from around the world? Then watch your mail for several chances to win beautiful textiles donated by the Santa Fe International Folk Art Market. If you've never donated to KUNM before, you won't receive a mailing, but you can still donate and register for 13 chances to win at KUNM.org. Click Support KUNM at the top of the homepage, return your mailing, or go online today because the first three winners will be drawn before the Spring Pledge Drive.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan, and we are talking about storefront lending in New Mexico. Should it be more regulated, and if so, how? We are in the studio today with Ona Porter, the president and CEO of Prosperity Works here in New Mexico. On the phone with us, he's traveling for business but very generously agreed to call in with us. Andrew Morrison is with Sun Loan Company, which has several stores here in New Mexico. Thank you, Andrew, again for being with us for a few minutes here.
I'm delighted to be with you. Can I pick up on something else that Ona said?
Yeah.
Briefly. The idea of 36, I think, is something that we really need to get away from that particular number. It's not the only number that we can actually use or work with. There are much more helpful numbers. The FDIC did a pilot program trying to see if 36 was a number that would work a few years ago, and they asked a number of banks to engage in this process, and not a single bank was able to cover their costs or make a profit at 36%. And I think that at that point, serious analysts have really dropped the idea of 36%. That doesn't mean that we can't do meaningful reform and we can't have some cost controls, we can't have a meaningful number that would produce really good savings and protections for consumers in New Mexico. So 36 is not helpful as a number. But equally, laissez-faire, where we are today, where anything goes, pretty much, is not helpful either. So I think there are people on both sides of this issue who are really trying hard to see if we can come up with something that would work, that is practical, that wouldn't simply annihilate the industry that's there.
We have a comment from Twitter here from Mando that says, I would rather sell plasma, go hungry, or ask a family member for a loan before going to a loan shark that sets you back further. I'm not selling my plasma. I did that once. Ona, tell me, I mean, these are not very good alternatives. What are the alternatives available to these people if we cap the rates at 36%? And as Andrew predicts, they all go out of business because they can't make money at that rate. Where will these people get that money?
Well, in fact, there are a number of business models, some of those nonprofit, as Andrew has suggested, and others for-profit that are lending at 36% or less. And three of those that are for-profit actually loan in New Mexico. So the idea that it can't be done and it is, you know, is not filling the need is ludicrous. The other thing to really know about this is that if we really cared about consumer protection, we would put in a law that is as simple as 36%, and it becomes transparent then. Is it or isn't it? And Andrew, as you know, is from out of state, as are 80% of the lenders in our state. So what we have is a transfer of the income and assets of low-income people from New Mexico out of state.
We have a caller on the line, Christy in Santa Fe, who says if 36% isn't enough interest, then that's a bad business model. Christy, how do you come to have this opinion?
Well, it's just logic. I appreciate being able that you're having this forum, and I hope that the New Mexico State Legislature staff members are listening to this. It's appalling that they couldn't stand up. It's interesting that you have a very gentlemanly sounding paternalistic diction, Mr. Laissez-faire, Andrew, who generously agreed to come on the show. I think that's more like he needs to be on the show, so we don't need to be too solicitous of this gentleman. And I want to really appreciate the woman who is speaking so clearly and forthrightly about the issue, because when the gentleman, Andrew, wants to talk about hard caps, we don't need hard caps. What we don't need is we don't need any more hard ships. And if none of you people can see what you're doing and the people who are producing this show are doing us a favor by bringing light into this, because this storefront business model sounds like some weird back alley darkness, and it can only bring misery, literal misery, to the people who can't pay those bills.
Christy, thank you for calling in today. We want to talk to another caller on the line right now. Let's go to Bob in Albuquerque, who talks about the connection between storefront lending and pension funds. Bob, what is this connection?
Morning, Gwyneth. Some couple years ago, I was following some of this and did some research on it. And the reason we're seeing an explosion of these things right now is because of the Great Recession, what we call the Great Recession, where the stock market took a big dive for about 2008 to 2011 and 12. And what happened was a lot of states have had pension funds, public pension funds, that were not bringing in enough money to make payments to the retirees. So they started changing the direction of their investments because they saw in this industry that there was a lot of poor people out there and that there was a big chance to make a big profit. So what is driving this thing is actually the huge amount of capital that's invested in state pension funds across the country that need to bring money in to be able to raise up their payout money for retirees.
Thank you, so, Bob, for that comment. We, Andrew, you know, can you tell me who you, some of the big investors in your companies are?
Yeah, no, it's a family-owned business. And I think most of the companies that are in the traditional installment loan industry, and I can't speak for the payday industry or anything else, but most of our industry is still family-owned, and companies have been around for as much as 100 years in some cases. But I just want to thank the first caller for calling me a gentleman. I thought that was that was very nice.
And I want to say that I did ask you to step out of a meeting in order to talk to us, so I do appreciate that.
Well, no problem. I mean, this is something I'm absolutely ready to talk as long as necessary about. But there was a major misconception, I think, that came out from the question, if it was a question or a comment. And when we look at 36, for instance, as a number, and she says that's way too high, I think the misconception is that rates are the same, or a fair rate or a break-even rate is the same, whatever the size of loan. And it clearly would be too high for a mortgage. But the key thing to understand is that rates are a function of the size and length of a loan. So the shorter the loan, the lower the cost, but the higher the rate, because of the role that fixed costs play in any loan. So it costs the same amount to make a $200,000 mortgage loan as to make a $200 loan. But when you have the same amount of money invested, it costs much more to make, you know, obviously 1,000 more loans than it would just one loan.
Let's go to one more caller right now. Let's talk to John in Santa Fe, who brings up the point that we see micro lending programs in other countries. John, what are you looking at in terms of micro lending?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have to say that while I think that here in the U.S. you're entitled to run any business you want, and I think there probably is a legitimate need for this gentleman's business, I do think that the excessive interest rate is a little beyond reasonable. I am thinking of the microloans that are occurring throughout India. Somebody help me with the name of the Indian doctor
Started this. Mohammed Yunus's Grameen Bank in Bangladesh was really the founder of that business.
Thank you very much. So in other words, there are ways to get money to people that needed it in a more reasonable way and more reasonable expense and to them. And I just think that while it's fair in a free market society for this gentleman to run his business, I think it's incumbent upon the legislature in New Mexico to make other avenues available. This gentleman's business should go away of its own accord because other people are making, the people needing money are making smarter choices. But it is incumbent upon us, that is the citizens in the state, to make that available to people. And I think you could find that, I think that lending is even done here in the U.S., and should mean that his business closes down of attrition because of people making more appropriate choices.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much for that comment. I want to bring in.
Can I respond to that one?
Let me bring in. I have to bring in Senator Steve Fishman, our third guest for the day. He has a master's in business administration from UCLA. He spent 20 years working in finance and management at Levi Strauss. Senator Fishman lives in Las Cruces and is spending his time now volunteering to work on regulating short-term lending. Thank you for joining us, Senator Fishman.
Thanks for having me on, Gwyneth.
We were going to let Andrew respond to that last comment before we bring you in to talk about that, too. Go ahead, Andrew.
Well, I was just going to say I'm a big fan of Mohammed Yunus and what he's done with the microlending business worldwide, and I would recommend everyone to read his book, Banker to the Poor, which was something that came out a few years ago. One of the things that you need to understand about microfinance, though, is that it is not well served by capping interest rates, and the consultative group to assist the poor, which is associated with the UN, which is advises on the issue of microfinance, said that that interest rate caps in that area are a bad idea because they necessarily restrict access to credit to the people who need it the most, because there is an inverse relationship between cost and rate. If you cap rates, you effectively eliminate the lowest cost loans. And that's what the poor need most.
Senator Fishman, so, we have a question here asking, how many lobbyists are in Santa Fe working on this issue? I know I've seen you around the Capitol a little bit, and I've seen you roaming the halls with Ona Porter. What does the other team look like?
Well, this year I haven't done a count. I know that last year I counted a total of 24 industry lobbyists, paid industry lobbyists, and they tended to be the highest profile, most influential lobbyists in the state. Many with what I would call revolving door legislative connections.
We're talking about the former Speaker of the State House, a bunch of former senators and representatives?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
So
and even former regulators in the Department of Financial Regulation here in New Mexico.
So, you know, you served one term in the Senate, is that right?
Correct.
And so that's a lot of experience that you have to go up against. I mean, from your experience in the state Senate, how powerful is the pressure from a group of 24 lobbyists who have a lot more experience in the state legislature than you do, and maybe a lot more experience in the details of this regulation than you do? What does that feel like to try to vote against their interests?
Well, you know, it works on a lot of levels. It's very difficult because there are strong relationships between the lobbyists and a lot of the legislators. And we all tend to listen to our friends more than we listen to others. And for many legislators, these lobbyists are very close and they're friends and they see them every day. And they wield a lot of influence. And probably the biggest place where you see it is what I would call a bias towards industry solutions to any problem. So you can pull together a lot of facts, and certainly that's happened in this issue, and present them, and people kind of nod their head and go, yes, and then an industry representative stands up, and everybody is suddenly listening, really listening. And so you've had a big uphill battle.
There's money involved here, too. You know, as New Mexico in Depth, our colleagues at New Mexico in Depth reported, five of the six senators who opposed legislation to cap what the lenders can charge took thousands of dollars in campaign donations from the industry in 2013 and 2014. The industry gave nearly $7,000 to the four Democrats and three Republicans on the 10-member Senate Corporations and Transportation Committee, which voted 6-3 to reject a bill that would have capped those rates. How powerful is the effect of that money, Senator Fishman?
Well, I just think it's a part of that whole relationship kind of marketing that's going on by the industry to make sure that their voice is heard the loudest. And that's just kind of another element that I hate to say buys loyalty because it's more subtle than that. But again, someone has got the resources to do you favors, and over time that influences your judgment. You tend to listen to that person and work with that person. And certainly that is very much true in the legislature.
We have a caller on the line from Sandia Park asking about companies that loan at 8%. Imola, did I get your name right?
My name is Enola.
Gotcha. So what's your question for us?
My question is, I have some money put aside. I'm a New Mexican, and I want to loan to New Mexicans. And there's a company that is doing it in other states at 8%. They meet up the person that has the money with the person that needs the money, and I can't do it in New Mexico. They're not allowed in New Mexico. So I'm wondering about these legislators and if they're not protecting the storefront business, because it's working well in other states. And so here I have, you know, maybe saved $200,000. Small investors around the state may want to do this. I may not be the only one. And yet there's no avenue for us to do this. So I'm just wondering why this is so. I even forget the name of the company. I kind of dismissed it once I realized they're not allowed in New Mexico. So
thank you.
I just
Thank you for bringing that to our attention. And Enola, we'll look into some of those details. We had a Twitter comment earlier asking, does New Mexico have any kind of free financial coaching or literacy programs? Ona, is that the kind of thing you guys do?
We do. We do. We do this all. We have about 22 partners across the state. And a big part of what we do is financial capability training. It is really key. And people believe in it, but they don't want to support it. It's one of those things that really makes a difference in people's lives, not unlike the community development corporations that, if properly capitalized, could provide many more of the loans that we're talking about. And one of our partners, Native Community Finance, provides loans at 18%, and over the course of the last about 3 years has bailed out a number of people who've been caught in these loans to the tune of almost $2 million. And he is at break even, which is what his goal is as a nonprofit. But the other important part is there's been less than $1,000 that he's had to write off. So people want to repay. The question is, can they?
We're going to take a quick break now. We've been talking about storefront lending. These are the car title loans, payday loans, tax return anticipation loans, and things like that here on the KUNM Call-In Show. Call in now with your questions and comments. You can call us at 277-5866 or toll-free 877-899-5866. Email callinshow@kunm.org. Find us on Facebook at KUNM Radio or tweet at KUNM News. We'll be right back.
The Southwest Women's Law Center is celebrating 10 years of advocating for girls and women in New Mexico. Join the celebration on Saturday, March 28th at 6 p.m. in the UNM Student Union Ballroom. Special guest speaker, Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham. For complete details and tickets, visit swomenslaw.org or call 505-244-0502. A message from tax-exempt Southwest Women's Law Center.
How do you accept the suicide of a brother, especially if you feel that you might have been able to stop it with a single phone call? Philip Connors, author of the hit Fire Season, has been struggling with this terrible grief for years, leading him through many unusual experiences that he shares in his new book, All the Wrong Places. Join host Stephen Spitz as he welcomes Philip Connors to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas this Friday morning at 8 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. We are talking about short-term loans in New Mexico. Should they be more regulated? If so, what should we do? We had an email comment earlier asking, why can't people get small loans from their banks? This is from a woman who says she was refused a $300 loan from a bank she had an account with for 5 years. I'm going to put this question to our three guests today. In the studio with us is Ona Porter, the president and CEO of Prosperity Works. On the phone, we have Andrew Morrison, who is with Sun Loan Company, which has storefront lending stores here in New Mexico. Also on the phone, we have former State Senator Steve Fishman, who is a former finance executive at Levi Strauss. He is volunteering his time to push for more regulation on the payday lending, storefront lending industry. Thank you all for being here. Do one of you want to help us understand why people can't just go to banks?
Well, I can certainly mention that, as I say, the FDIC did a pilot program to see if banks would go into this market, and they invited all sorts of creative approaches from banks. And the only stipulation they made was that the rate needed to be 36% or under. And at the end of the, I think it was a two-year pilot program, not a single bank had been able to cover their costs or make a profit at 36%, making those smaller loans. So the reason that no banks are going to make those loans is that they can't afford to do so. I mean, unless they subsidize those rates by, through their other activities somehow.
We have a caller on the line. Isaac in Albuquerque says he works in a law office that sues lenders. Isaac, what kind of work does your firm do?
Well, we're a general practice firm, but recently we've been taking on cases against lenders who've been charging interest rates that we consider to be exorbitant. I've heard you guys talking a lot about things that the legislature is considering to
to cap interest rates, but there's also the judiciary has already made some pretty broad statements that loans that charge an unconscionable interest rate are illegal, even without there being a regulation in place from the legislature. The case where they decided that, they said interest rates over 1,000% were unacceptable. But since then, we've been taking actions against lenders who've been charging over 400% interest rates, and we've actually had great success. So the main thing I just wanted to say to anyone listening out there, if you've got a payday loan with more than 400%, you don't need to wait for the legislature to act. You can sue those guys right now. And there's a very good chance that they'll settle and completely forgive your debt. So the courts are already on our side. We don't need to wait for the legislature to do something.
Thank you, Isaac, for calling in with that. Andrew, how much, you know, what kind of percentage of the loans that people take out with your company are never paid back?
That's a good question. I think we end up charging off somewhere in the 20% range on an annual basis. So
so you make a lot of money on most of these loans, but no money on some of them.
That's obviously the case, yes. I mean, if somebody can't pay us back, then that's the end of the story, and they, you know, we have to write that loan off. It's one of the risks. It's obviously very different from working like a bank. I speak as a recovering banker myself. I was in that business for 10 years.
Well, Isaac mentioned Isaac mentioned that the judicial branch has been taking some action here. We've also seen at the municipal level that Albuquerque, Santa Fe, Alamogordo, Las Cruces, a few other municipalities, I think, have all passed resolutions in support of limiting these rates. I want to go to Brendan in Albuquerque now, and he was talking about the FDIC here. Brendan, what point did you want to make?
Yeah, I've heard Mr. Morrison mention a few times this FDIC pilot project, and he's not comparing apples to apples with the short-term lending industry in New Mexico because the FDIC regulates banks, and short-term lenders are not banks. They're not subject to the same regulations. They don't have the same cost structures. They don't have the same types of reporting requirements. They don't have the same types of lending and deposit requirements, and they have standards where they require certain benchmarks to be met by the applicant for a loan before they lend the money.
Apples and oranges, I hear you saying, Brendan. Thank you for making that point.
This is Steve Fishman. I just wanted to make a quick comment on affordability, and we're talking about banks versus payday lenders. And, you know, there's a whole nother group of business models where you can get financing. And where you can get it for 36% or less, and it serves this low-income population. And Progreso Financiero, they do one over the Internet that addresses Hispanics, and it's huge. They've got 130 stores plus an Internet business, and they're making money. Community Loan Center in the Rio Grande Valley makes loans at 20%, working along with large employers. Turbo Title, if you get on the Internet, does title loans on autos for 36%. And I think the important thing that people need to realize and that I feel is super important is that when interest rates get really high, when they get 100%, that's not really credit. You have given that lender a lot more money than they ever gave you in a very short period of time. And you're financing them. They're not financing you.
I want to talk about, thank you for that good point there.
Sure.
I want to talk about two, you know, as we have mentioned this hour, the 36% cap that was proposed by Prosperity Works and is supported by some lawmakers is effectively dead in the legislature right now. It could come back. I mean, it could become undead. But there are two other proposals that are still working their way through. One of them is House Bill 356, sponsored by Representative Jane Powdrell Culbert, which would require small loan licensees to do a few things. One of them is to disclose the fees and interest associated with tax refund anticipation loans. This bill would require them to limit the amount of money they can give people based on their tax refund at 85% of what they think they're going to get. It would put a cap on the charges, fees, and interest at $18 per every $100 in principal. And it would require refund anticipation loans to mature in either more than a month or less than 2 weeks. Ona Porter, how do you guys stand on that bill?
Well, we are opposed to this bill, and it really is to codify another form of what we consider to be theft of low-income assets and income. I actually did some calculations based on testimony that was given by one lender who owns Navajo Trading Company in Farmington, and using the formulas that are called out in that bill. And what I figured out is that he, at halfway through the tax season, had already made over $2 million. And this $2 million, 92% of this comes from low-income people, 62% of this comes from earned income tax returns.
And well, and you get your money pretty quickly from the government,
that's
right?
That's right. So these are fully secured loans, and they're still charging this huge amount of money, and it's a very short period of time.
The other proposal that we're looking at, Senator Fishman, is Senate Bill 527, sponsored by Clemente Sanchez. This would create the Refund Anticipation Loan Act, and it would more closely regulate this business, requiring the licensing of all the people involved in this business, requiring more disclosure and including some penalties. What do you think about that proposal?
Well, actually, it was a mirror bill to Jane Poudrell Culbert's, and as hers went through, it eliminated all that licensing stuff. Frankly, that was ineffective bureaucracy that kind of mirrors our current payday lending regulation scheme. So it's pretty much identical to what Jane's will be. If it moves further through the legislature, Poudrell Culbert's version will be the one that gets the attention.
We have an email comment here saying there isn't a need for storefront lending services. There is a need for living wages and affordable necessities. Storefront lending targets the poor. We have a caller on the line, Karen in Albuquerque, who says that interest rates sought by the industry would undercut recent court decisions. Karen, welcome to the show.
Hi. I wanted to mention that one of the points that hasn't been brought up is that the legislation that you're talking about that's been proposed by the lenders would put into place is New Mexico law rates up to 330% APRs, and for the refund anticipation loan, over 1,000%. And what that would do would be undercut the very judicial decisions that the prior caller was talking about. And I think it's interesting that in all the conversation that Mr. Morrison's been having, he's never mentioned the rates that they are proposing. And those are really outrageous rates. And if the legislation were adopted, it would, in essence, it would allow lenders to continue to harm people. And one of the other points is that the profit that these lenders get has been documented to be from the repeat lending, the rollovers over and over again, that the long-term indebtedness is part of the model. And that's why it's so detrimental to people.
Karen, stay with us for 1 minute here. Andrew, I want to ask you, you have acknowledged that the industry could be a little bit more regulated. What do you think is reasonable right now?
Well, I think that every fair-minded person is trying to find a middle ground here between the absolute elimination of the industry, good and bad. Safe and unsafe products on the one hand, and a situation that exists today where almost anything goes. And so I think responsible members of industry and responsible members of the advocacy community are trying to get together and find out, what could work, what could we get past, what would work. And I have to commend those people on both sides who've tried to do that and find out what that middle ground might be. I don't know that it's helpful to get into rates right now, but I mean, I think there are a number of things that that Representative Lundstrom's bill accomplished. One was certainly that they were going to cap rates and cap costs, but also they were going to close loopholes. And one of the big challenges of the current legal system is that, yes, we passed a Payday Loan Reform Act back in 2007, but it's completely ineffective because nobody chooses to be licensed under that section of code. They can go and make loans under money interest and usury instead.
Karen, do you have a response to that, Karen?
Well, I think the payday problem has been twofold. One is that as soon as it was put into place, the lenders started making longer-term loans through the installment loan product as a way of avoiding the specific protections. The other thing is that in the payday product, the payday lender, it's a short-term product, 2 weeks to 4 weeks. And they're supposed to offer a fee-free, no-cost repayment plan if you're having trouble repaying it. What the lenders do instead is tell people, well, we have this plan, but if you use it, we won't ever give you another loan. So the rollovers have actually increased in payday lending. And there's still about 80,000 payday loans made every year, and the rollovers are 5.8. That's actually more than when the 2000 law was passed. So it has been, I agree with Mr. Morrison, ineffective, but it's been ineffective because the lenders have been able to evade it, which is one of the findings in the Supreme Court decision.
Ona, you know, if people find themselves tangled up in loans that they can't repay, what resources are there that are available to them?
Well, unfortunately, there are not many. And I was just talking to a young man last week who actually had his family help him get out of the title loan that he had when they were about to take his car. And his mother very wisely said, "You're going to need to repay me now. And one of the things is I'm going to charge you $50 a month more, and I'm going to put that in a savings account for you so that when you, again, hit some bump in the road and need some funds, that it will be available to you, your own money."
Steve Fishman, do you have any recommendations that when former constituents call you about this that you give to them?
Well, you know, occasionally I'll have people call me and I'll send them over who are in trouble with one of these loans, and I'll have them call Native Community Finance or Ona's organization. The other thing is just stay away from the storefront loans. So there's always another way to get money, and whether it's family or friends or just budgeting better. Something that you thought of as a necessity, but maybe you can actually do without, that is a much safer way to scrape up the cash that you might need for some emergency.
Andrew, we have just a few seconds left. If folks get in trouble with your company, what do you recommend they do to get themselves out of a pinch?
Well, one of the things that they do is that they can walk away from a loan from us if they can't pay us. I mean, it's not like we don't use the courts or anything like that. We don't come after them. If they can't pay us, they can't pay us. But there are organizations that they can go to if they need help, and I'm sure Ona's is one of the better ones.
Well, thank you all for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Thanks especially to our guests, Ona Porter with Prosperity Works here in the studio. Ona, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Andrew Morrison at Sun Loan, thank you for joining us from Atlanta, Georgia.
You're very welcome.
And Senator Steve Fishman, thanks for calling in from Las Cruces.
Thank you.
If we have posted links to the information we talked about today, so go on over to KUNM.org and check them out. If you missed any of the program or you want to share this with your friends, the audio will be posted on our website. And you can also find audio from previous KUNM call-in shows, as well as the outstanding story that KUNM reporter Ed Williams did on this very subject. You can email comments to us here at callinshow@KUNM.org. Find us on Facebook, KUNM Radio, or follow the newsroom on Twitter @KUNM News.